Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Those were the dulcet tones of our founder and mentor, Brian Brown, and the Brown Briefly's are gathered today once more to sort of discuss events, local, regional, national, and world. Although today we are missing Kevin Jones, our intrepid and indivisible Vachon progressive, who is taking care of Jones LLC concerns this morning. But joining us are in the studio, and we actually have two in the studio today, are Truman O'Brien and Lynn Kerrigan, and on Zoom, along with me, is Gail Kellner. So Truman, anything exciting in the world of the O'Briens?
Well, not too much. I've been getting the airplane going, and we've fixed a few things on the airplane that it's been bugging us for a while, and putting a little time on that. So that's good. But that's about it. We've been pretty quiet.
Yes, things are shutting down again. So
yes,
becoming very, very quiet.
It is. Yes, it is.
Lynn Kerrigan, what's happening in your world?
Hey, well, I've been starting to get together to play some music with various sets of friends, which is the most exciting thing ever. Even though the Delta variant is back kicking everybody's butts, we are being very, very cautious and staying far away and masked some of the time. But I don't think any of us could have gone any longer without sitting down and playing music together. There's just something so healing and so necessary for people who are musicians to get to do that. So I'm gonna try to be real safe and yet continue what I love.
I have to throw out one thing. You know, talking about playing music. Years ago, I played with the Shoreline Community Band.
Oh yeah.
And I would come home after flying, and I'd be just dog tired, and I would say, "Oh, I don't want to go to practice tonight." We only practice once a week. But I would drag myself up there to play, and I would come home so energized.
Yeah, it gives you energy.
It's amazing. Just amazing. Anyway, so yeah. I'm glad to see you doing that.
Yes, thank you. It's really important.
It is. And it's also good to see performers performing outside and people wearing masks and staying socially distanced. But the concerts in the park have been a real hit and a real uplift. I think people need live music. I mean, you can listen to music, recorded music all day long, and you can listen to the greatest recordings there are, but doesn't meet the same standards as live
Nothing
music.
Like live music.
Absolutely.
And my pals, Jim Burke and Mary Shackelford, with whom I played, are going to be playing at the Saturday Farmers Market coming up. So they're trying to kind of go back to some normal venues and be careful and safe. And I've also been in touch with Sandra Noel recently about some of the poetry events that she's cooking up. She's been meeting with all the various players in the poetry world and coming up with some good ideas. You'll be hearing more about that soon. So
great.
Life goes on, even if threatened.
Right. Sandra Noel is our Vachon Poet Laureate for this year. So,
yes, thank you.
So she is taking on pulling together the poetry community and planning some events over the year. So hopefully Delta doesn't squish those kind of plans. And how is our West Side, North End West Side resident doing, Gail Kellner?
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for asking. Well, I took a final dip in the Salish Sea day before yesterday. I will see if there's another one in my future, depending on the weather. I'm pretty much a daily or double daily dipper at this point. So it's been pretty fun. Big news in my world, though, is my book is now out and available for pre-order. Everywhere books are sold, from Amazon, Barnes & Noble. There was, you go looking at the internet, it's like, well, you can get it in India, Canada, the
wow.
UK. I mean, it's just, it's everywhere. It's one of the beauties. I held out for a traditional publisher, and it's that distribution chain that is so significant with that. So very excited, starting to plan, although the book won't actually be released until April. They start these things early, revving engines. So
wow.
You have to go looking. It isn't going to be at the top of any list at this point because it's too new. But if you're interested, it's out there. So.
And the title, please?
And the title. Oh, thank you. Thank you. So it's under Gigi Kellner as my name. So just the two G's, though. Gail Gladys, as it turns out. Thank you, Mother. And the the title is Hope, A History of the Future. And it is basically it's a novel, but it's based in science and historical and legal precedents, imagining a world that the world that could be. And it concerns everything from global peace to what the world may look like seven generations from now, and how we could influence it to be, it's a vision of peace, justice, and verdant sustainability, as well as, you know, a look too at what happens if we do nothing. So, but like I said, it's a novel, pretty fun. It's got lots of, there's a character, the book itself is magical, a history book that falls out of time and place into this family's home library. And it's the cat in the book, engage with the family to have them read about the future. So it's got been described as engaging and playful and thought-provoking. So I hope you all check it out.
All the things that you are, I look forward to it, Gail.
Thank you. Thank
and it you. Is available for pre-order on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and the bookshop. So there
Ooh.
You go.
The bookshop as in the Vashon bookshop.
Well, it just says bookshop, so I'm not sure.
Bookshop, for those who don't know, is a big distributor to independent bookstores.
Oh.
And so that's, it's the place that independent bookstores click to order books. So if you go into Vashon, if you go into our local bookstore, and I've been talking with them, we'll do a book event in the spring and whatnot. And, they'll be able to pre-order it for you if you wanted to, or you can do it on your own through your computer. And really just any, I was shocked at, like I said, you could get, do they still use rubies in India? They gave the price in ruby.
Rupees.
Yeah. Rupee. Yeah.
Rupee. Yeah.
If you Google
pounds, if you wanted to get it in Spain or the UK, it was in pounds in the UK and the European coin.
Euros.
Euro if you wanted to get it in Europe and Australia. It was pretty interesting to see it roll out Canada just across the board. It scared me a little bit and excited me.
If you Google it, there's a great picture of you.
Oh, I see that.
Thank you.
You look very tan and happy with your Australian hat on and a deep tan and flashing white teeth, looking thrilled.
Yeah, it's pretty. I think I was out painting. Someone took that picture.
Yeah,
was out.
You were.
Out painting. Yeah. And but the book cover, pretty provocative, I think. Can you describe it, Truman? Or can you?
I don't see it. I don't. They're not showing it.
Okay. Anyway,
you're seeing part of it right there. That's the cat's head and ears. So the cat that I know is on the cover is sort of cut out on this website. We've got the top of the ears.
There it is. Yeah, it's just a night sky with the stars, and then the cat's face and the eyes looking over the bottom. That's pretty cute.
Yeah.
Looks like a combination of Twilight Zone and Goodnight Moon.
Yeah.
and a little, I think that might be about.
might be appropriate, huh?
Well, congratulations, Gail.
Thanks so much.
Yep. So, and I'm Bruce Holman hosting today's show. We rotate this around the five of us. And what's exciting in my world right now is Friday evening, first Friday at the museum, we're having the closing of In-N-Out, being LGBTQ on Vashon Island, which is an exhibit that has was supposed to be up for about a year and now has been up for almost 2.5 years because of COVID. But it's been an incredible exhibit. It's gotten recognition from King County, an award, the John Spellman Award for community involvement and diversity, and also gotten an award from the American Association of State and Local Histories for the outstanding small museum exhibit in the country. So both nationally and regionally been recognized as a very important exhibit. And it closes this weekend.
So we were able to get we still are able to see it one more time.
Yes.
Friday.
Yeah, it'll be open through Sunday.
Friday through Sunday, okay.
Yeah, it'll be open through Sunday. And the museum is open Wednesday through Sunday, 1 to 4 p.m. So you can see it anytime this week at the museum. And then Friday evening from 6 to 9, I think it is, we'll have a closing party and have some music, have a hat show, a variety of things going on in the back, outside, socially distanced, all that kind of good stuff. And the museum is, of course, has a protocol during this sort of fourth wave of COVID that, only a limited number of people's in enclosed space at any one time have to be vaccinated, require vaccination, require a mask, unless you're under 12 and then require a mask. So visit the museum and catch In-N-Out. Yeah, Truman.
Yeah, I just have to say, Bruce, a huge, huge kudos to the museum and to all you folks. A Voice of Vashon hosted a specialty showing of the whale. Was it the whale people? Is it called
whale people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. with the surround sound or the surround show. Fabulous. Mm-hmm. Really, really, really well done. And congratulations on a wonderful exhibit. It was terrific. Oh.
Thanks, Truman. And that's a preview, if you will, of an exhibit that will be opening in November, COVID willing, called Natural Wonders.
Right.
And the back part, the outside part, we opened this summer. So the geology exhibit is open now. The whale people closed down last weekend. It was the last weekend before it's moved on. And then we had the event in July with the Red Road Pole that went back to Washington, D.C. So it's been a very productive summer for the museum and for the emerging exhibit, Natural Wonders, sort of subtitled An Island Shaped by Water. And it's sort of an exhibit about the natural history of Vashon Island. Yeah, Gail.
I was waving around, and I just have to say, I echo Truman's kudos to you all that have been involved in that, and Bruce, you in particular, as the president of the museum. I think that it's fantastic to keep history a living thing that is engaging and draws people in, and you all have done that and more.
Well, great. Thank you. So moving on to topics of the week, maybe we can start locally and work out to nationally. We had a little bit of a kerfuffle going on the island over the last couple weeks with the announcement by the fire chief that he would not get vaccinated and no reason given. Any sort of reaction from the weeklies or the brieflies? The weeklies.
The weeklies? I think that's probably more like it.
Right, yes. Right. We've got a new title.
The weeklies.
any reaction about the fire chief's decision?
I felt very sad about it personally. It felt like, oh no, please not that. Because this is a man, you know, who has funded the Medical Reserve Corps through his role as chief of the Fire and Rescue Department. He's been a very, very progressive and strong leader in the community, and I felt this mixture of horror and sadness at reading that, because I don't understand how somebody who's in a leadership in public health in this community, you know, would take a position like that without explaining anything. I suppose he doesn't really owe us an explanation, but it seems to me to be a very sad demarcation point that feels unnecessary. I just think he's going to lose his job, and should. And, you know, I just felt very sorry for him, because he's been such a strong leader.
And what he owes us is compliance.
Yes.
That's what he owes
us. That's what I'm meaning.
It's just ridiculous. It really angers me, to tell you the truth. This is, I mean, I told you last week or the week before that I'm part of the vaxxers who are the angry vaxxers against the unvaccinated. I think it's just beyond the pale that someone in that leadership position is going to take that stance.
Yeah.
There's just no call for it at all. He's got to go, period.
Mm-hmm. I had etymologically, I thought it was very interesting to use that term, beyond the pale. That came up last week in a conversation with a friend, and they wondered what it meant.
Exactly.
Know, sort of. It means beyond the acceptable.
Exactly.
But the terminology, the term itself, goes back to ancient Britain and the concept of cities and towns being surrounded by pales or stakes in the ground. Just, and it really emerged as an English colloquialism in the Irish Rebellion, where the English didn't dare sort of venture outside the pale or the surrounds of Dublin, because they were protected there.
That's exactly.
But once they got
right
beyond the pale, they were assailable by all kinds of Irish brigands. So it becomes an English colloquialism, beyond the pale, meaning beyond the acceptable.
Yeah.
Or into an area where it's very dangerous to go. And so I think that's very appropriate.
Probably appropriate, yeah.
Yep, very appropriate, yeah.
Yeah, I always thought that in Ireland there was actually a little mountain range between Dublin and the Derry area. I have to say that very carefully. so that it is, that's what I understood it to be too, also an old Irish expression for you better watch out if you get beyond these borders.
Right. Gail, what's your reaction to the chief's position?
Well, you know, I've been out of town, and I've enjoyed that. I've been up in the San Juans. I was up in the San Juans for about a week, and that was so a little bit of relief from the local news. But I have been, you know, reading about it, catching up on the news, and I would love to know his reasons and have him speak about that, because it. To me, you know, the position of anti-vaxxers seems very unusual to me, because we require vaccinations from everything from being in school to being, you know, involved in sports. It's just it's a social responsibility inside of a group to protect one another. And, you know, I know that the governor does allow for medical exceptions or religious exceptions, but he apparently has neither of those. So I believe it probably is political. And I just think it speaks to the whole disaster of the former administration, number 45, you know, making something as basic as public health controversial.
Yeah, exactly.
Well said. Well said.
Agreed. Yeah. And it comes down to me, in my mind, it comes down to the nature of what is leadership in a community. You know, as Truman so eloquently put it, it's beyond the pale. I mean, we have leaders and we pay them well. He's a well-paid community leader with responsibilities to the community. And to take a position like that is unconscionable to me, you know, and to take a position like that without explaining
exactly
the reasons behind it. You know, well, it's sort of like our political leaders owe us responses and owe us transparency. And I think that's important. And when we don't have it, we need to demand it.
Absolutely. And you know, for me, there is no explanation. I mean, I don't care. if you want to know the truth. I really don't care. You know, have whatever reason you have is very unimportant to me at all. Either do it or don't. And if you don't, get the heck out. You know, that's it. That's it for me.
You know, what concerned me was that the article that made the Seattle Times, I believe it was Sunday or Saturday, on this, because Vachon once again made the press over this issue, is that they actually, in that article, went through some sort of cutting remark about how now our commissioners were going to be looking at his job description and trying to figure out a way to keep him. And I just thought, you know, that is a misrepresentation, for one, of the argument or the feelings that have erupted about this. And I think it is designed to kind of portray the conflict that we have been known for, you know, for a long time about an anti-vax island, when the last couple of years have shown us to be very responsible in our vaccination, you know, desires and trying to get the whole island safe. And it's all being kind of confounded with some of the earlier questions about child vaccinations and any relationship to autism, which in my understanding has been disproven. And I just hated seeing Vachon portrayed not only as another hotbed of anti-vaccination, which they made it sound like, but also that we would consider changing the job description to let him off the hook for it. I thought was a little premature and a little bit unwanted from my standpoint.
Yeah, and in my mind, if that board figures out a way to keep him, then they need to go as well. I mean, this is unacceptable, period.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, at the last fire commissioner meeting, my understanding is it was a 4-1 vote, and to sort of punt it down the road a bit. But they will have to confront this mm-hmm. as a commission very soon. And it's going to be interesting to see how they respond to it. It's sort of...
Bruce, what was the 4-1 vote?
Table it?
I don't remember the exact details of it, but it was essentially whether to require him to get a vaccination at this point before.
And it was 4 that said yes, he was required.
No, the other way around. No. Yeah, four punted it down the road, basically.
He said they would determine that at a later date.
Or they were getting more information now or gathering more responses, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they wouldn't make a decision last week.
When the crowd comes out with pitchforks and torches, they'll know it's time.
Right. Yeah. So it really leads me to my next question. Are we seeing the fourth wave of COVID sparked by basically by the Delta variant? Cases on Vachon have gone up dramatically. We've had nearly one case a day over the last month. So are we going to see a more an increase in cases as we move into the fall? U.S. deaths are already exceeding 1,300 a day.
Yeah.
I mean, we were down at 300 a day, you know, 2 months ago. And in the last month and a half, we've gone up to sort of half of what we were at the very peak of this pandemic back mid last year. So what do the Briefleys think? Yeah, Gail.
Oh, I was just going to throw in there. It does appear that we're going into another wave, and we're going to have to find ways to cope with that. Maybe new ways. You know, maybe not a complete shutdown that we had last year, but it looks to me like we're going to definitely going into that. I was have been planning to go to the wooden boat show, something many islanders are interested in out in Port Townsend, annual wooden boat show out there, festival, and that's been canceled. So I think that communities our size are grappling with this issues across the state.
Yeah, it's a little confounding to me because, you know, the case rates here are a little skewed because we're so highly vaccinated. And Ina Opplinger, who was here last week from the Medical Reserve Corps, was kind of, you know, kind of trying to be very careful as she talked about case rates and case statuses, because it really depends on your community context and how many people are already vaccinated. But she is saying that, you know, we were having about a case a week that was mostly, if not all, unvaccinated people. And so we're definitely having this wave of unvaccinated people now catching this highly transmissible variant. And, you know, the mandates now for indoor mask wearing and kind of social distancing to continue has kind of got to be looked at and honored. I think I'm wearing a mask today because of the variant's transmissibility. It's just highly contagious. And, you know, even vaccinated people can get it, but we're not going to die or likely go to the hospital. And I just think, you know, if there's a cautionary tale, it's watch what's happening to unvaccinated people right now. It's a time of reckoning.
The thing that bothers me most about the unvaccinated is the fact that they're allowing this virus to mutate, and it's going to mutate. It's going to get worse. I mean, I say get worse. It could get better, you know, but it is going to mutate. It's going to change. And when it does, you know, who knows what it's going to change to? And those folks are contributing to that change. And that's what's one of the biggest things that bothers me about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can have it happen here too on the island.
That's
right. We could have that variant pop up right here. So, anyway.
Well, yeah, and a number of the cases on Vashon have been breakthrough cases.
Yeah.
So it's not just the unvaccinated who are being infected on the island. And our vaccination rate is very high among the sort of 12-year and older.
Right.
We're up to close to 90% vaccination rate, but that's still 10% that are unvaccinated. And then everyone under 12 is unvaccinated. And so there's a whole bunch of little rugrats running around and carriers, if you will. And school started yesterday.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, and even though Vashon schools have a very strict protocol about masks and social distancing and all that stuff, I mean, being the husband of a kindergarten teacher for lots and lots of years, I know every fall
they bring home everything, don't they?
Right.
Every disease that ran through the classrooms.
Oh, so. Yeah. When our kid first went to school, man, we were sick for a month or longer, you know, with all the stuff she brought home. But I lost my train of thought. Go ahead, Gail.
Oh, I was just going to second that. I mean, I love that they're trying to do it in person from the standpoint, I think the kids really miss being in school, and they benefit greatly from both the social and educational environment of the school and being present in person. But, oh my goodness, I can't even imagine how they would actually control something like the Delta variant inside of school. Having been a teacher, everything from kindergarten to high school and everything in between, I can guarantee you, especially the little ones, boy, they can't tie their shoes or line up. There's masking is going to be a hit and miss kind of situation.
Does anyone know what the status is of the booster shot here on the island? Is it available? And
it is, and you can go to the Vashon Pharmacy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not familiar with CMAR, but yes. It is available. You can get appointments for a booster. The pharmacy website right now is shut down, waiting on the next arrival of a batch of vaccinations. But you can check out the website and actually get an appointment and get a booster shot, even if it's not a full eight months after your initial. So, yeah, they are available. We just, the pharmacy just doesn't have a new shipment coming in yet. So.
My understanding from Ina's talk and, you know, our discussion about that last week is that the public health people are making a little bit of a distinction between the shots that are now available for the immunocompromised people who are at greater risk of being contagious, or they might not have even had a vaccination up until now, that they are really encouraging them to get theirs now, and that those of us who might be needing a booster shot for general, immune boosting, are supposed to be getting ours at the 8th month, that you mentioned. So I got my last one in February, so I would be due to be getting mine in October. So it's a little bit confusing because we're using that term booster shots for both groups, and right. It's not quite the same.
The reason I'm most concerned is that next week I'm attending a reunion where there's going to be more than 300 people attending. Ooh. And so I'm really thinking about, probably wouldn't be a bad idea for me to get that booster if I could.
Yeah, I'd go explain that and see what they have to say, because, they're pretty good at interpreting reasonable processes and outcomes here. Right. It's so locally controlled, we can do that.
Right.
So another question I have for you guys is in terms of governors and leadership. We seem to see the United States evolving into two types of governors. Governors like we have here in Washington State, Inslee, Brown in Oregon, Hochul in New York, on the one hand, who are putting in mask mandates, who are requiring state workers to be vaccinated and all that kind of stuff. And then you have the Abbotts of Texas and the DeSantis of Florida, who are sort of following the Trump example and just sort of poo-pooing the whole thing and saying, actually opposing mandates. And so what's going to happen with states in the United States? Are we heading toward another civil war?
I think it's pretty clear that the folks that in those states that support the Abbotts and the DeSantis are going to continue to vote for them because they agree with their stance, from what I'm seeing anyway. And those folks in states that don't are not going to, they're going to support the people who think like we think,
It's so interesting to me that we're being extremist again, even on this public health leadership, that they would cast somebody like Jay Inslee, who's being very cautious to stick to the CDC guidelines and really is taking a strong stand about mandates early in this argument. He's now seen as an extremist and people are suing him, which I just find shocking and a waste of everybody's time and money. And yet, we're a country that seems to like our extremes. We look at the Ron DeSantis and the Abbotts, and then Jay, on the other hand, is trying to hold the fort with nothing more than, public health guidelines. It's not extremist. It's really quite centrist, if you think about it. But we like to promote media wars or something. I don't know what the deal is in our country. We're just so polarized, we can't quit fighting each other. It's weird.
Gail?
I wonder if, as we go into this next wave and into this next winter, if some minds aren't going to be changed when the people around them are so severely sick or dead, dying, hospitals overrun again, I wonder what it will take. And it'll be curious to see if what is needed is the kind of evidence that that people get when they are up close to what that looks like to lose someone to a pandemic. But those kind of numbers, we're talking, what's the equivalent? Truman, weigh in on this for me. How many planes a day would have to be crashing and killing everyone aboard to be at 1,300 deaths in the United States? Is that roughly 3 or 4?
They told me there would be no math. So. Hang on a minute. I've got my calculator out here. Let's just say, a 737, the 900 holds about 170 people thereabouts. So if you're 130 people, it'd be 100 airplanes, so something less than that, 100 or less.
So we're talking about, in the neighborhood, let's just be on the very conservative side and say that's 5 airplanes crashing a day and killing everyone aboard.
Way more than that.
We've got people standing there saying, this is not a problem. It isn't real.
Yeah, clamoring to get on the airplane.
Clamoring to get on that airplane.
Yeah.
It is nonsensical.
Yeah. It is.
So we would be outraged as a country if, you know, this is 9/11 twice, you know, every other day in terms of the numbers.
Yeah. And it's a good metaphor.
It's really, you know, I think that we just have to cope at some level that it's just not something we're going to make sense of.
Well, go ahead.
Well, it may be the ultimate Darwin test.
Hey, listen, that's what I've said. That's what I've been saying. This pandemic is evolutionary in its effect. We're going to kill off all the dumb people, so the intelligence quotient of the world is going to go up.
There'll be another renaissance.
Indeed.
Another enlightenment.
No doubt. There went that train of thought again. You know, I have about 6 things going on here. So what happens is I think of something and then 4 other things happen and I lose it. So
same time.
Bear with me. I'll get it back.
We've noticed you can spit and chew gum, though, so we trust you. You'll come back.
I'll come back.
So Truman, you're a Vietnam vet, and you have a number of friends who you served with over there. Mm-hmm. What's your reading of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, and how do you relate it to the withdrawal from Vietnam?
Oh, I don't think there's any comparison. A number of my Vietnam buddies are, Biden's got to go, you know, he's just completely failed in this. And I sent him a note back and say 120,000 plus have been evacuated. And what do we get out of Vietnam? 5,000, maybe. You know, I don't think there's any comparison. Joe Biden is just this senile old man that, you know, can't get anything done. Well, some things are happening out there. That's what I said back to them. And also I said back to them, oh, what's your alternative? Do you want Kamala Harris or Pelosi? Which do you want? Because those are the next two in line.
A woman, oh my God.
Well, I'm telling you, those are the next two in line. So I say to them, they say Biden's got to go. I say, okay, do you want Kamala or do you want Nancy Pelosi?
I which bet
do you
that want? Stops because them, doesn't it?
It does. I don't get any response from them when they say that.
No, they want Trump back. You know, which is the thing that just is so egregious to me, is that man could do anything, you know, so ridiculous and bold and arrogant and mean and all of these things that he did. And they're standing up and saying Biden is senile and ineffective. You know, really?
Listen, I just read an interview that Trump did just recently talking about Afghanistan and all of that. And if you try and read what he said verbatim, it is almost nonsensical. I mean, it's like there's a thread in there where he says, yeah, I did this and I did that. But it's just none of it meshes. I mean, the guy can't even put together 2 sentences. It's amazing to me.
I think he's first in line to get on those planes crashing.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, no. If you look at who's vaccinated, All of the governors, you know, most of Congress are vaccinated. So, you know, what's the deal?
I'm curious, Bruce, can you give us, I know a little of the history of Afghanistan and its previous, you know, conflicts there, where we actually funded the Taliban at one point to fight the Russians. Mm-hmm. But can you give us a little brief history of Afghanistan and how we got to where we are now, and was there any other choice? I don't see any other choice than to get out, other than to have a truly united effort, but through the United Nations or something to hold the peace. It's not our place.
Well, Afghanistan, I mean, you have to go way back into Afghanistan's history, really, because Afghanistan has been the graveyard of empires, you know, from Alexander to the British, to the Russians, to the Americans. It's just a tar baby syndrome. You know, it's that sense once you get engaged, you can't get unengaged without a disaster. And so Afghanistan, we went into Afghanistan after 9/11, after having funded, you know, the opposition to the Russians for decades. We went in basically to prevent another 9/11. And rather than going in and sort of taking out the bin Laden sort of supporters and then getting out, we thought we'd nation build. And, you know, our record of nation building is basically every colonial power's record of nation building is not very good. You know, it's sort of it's the ultimate hubris, if you will, of an empire to think that we know better than local people on how to run their own business.
Exactly.
Well, here's what kills me. We say, oh, we're going to come in and we're going to bring democracy and we're going to let the people decide. And then the people say, okay, we want a dictator. That's not what we had in mind. But guess what? That's their choice. That's what they want to do. You know, come on.
Well, they're illiterate and tribal. And, you know, I think that I don't know why we would have ever thought they would accept democracy as a gift from us, when really what that meant was our overseeing their democracy for lots of years. And we thought we could and would do that. And nobody ever asked for that.
But please don't compare their intelligence level to the intelligence level of the United States, because, man, we are the same. I'm telling you. we are as dumb as they are. I mean, there's no question.
Tribal and illiterate. Willfully illiterate.
We're willfully illiterate. I mean, there's no question about it. I will just tell you one more quick thing, and I've said this before. When I was in the military, I was in military intelligence. And I know that's an oxymoron, but most of the guys that I served with were, some had either some college or had college degrees. They were all pretty intelligent folks. And when you would get transferred to another station, so you would go through and you were thrown in with the general population of the Army. Whoa. I mean, I could not believe how stupid some of these people were. And I mean, I was astounded. It's like, how can these guys dress themselves in the morning? I mean, they're just, and that's the U.S. I mean, that's our population. The same with where we are here. We tend to associate with people who are generally of our same education level, you know. And you go out and mix with the general public folks. Wow.
You better watch out. That's the way Hillary lost her election, by calling the U.S. population deplorables. Well, you better watch out.
I'm telling you. I'm sorry to tell you, but they are. Sorry. I get off on a rant, but it just drives me crazy.
Well, I think it's important to ending here. We want to distinguish the difference between someone who's uneducated and someone who's unintelligent, and we do have a problem with the lack of education in this country.
I agree.
And that does lead to young men and women signing up to be cannon fodder.
Yeah.
And which is, I think, what you experienced in the military sometimes.
And I hate to tell you, folks,